طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر، من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر. تسكله ماسا لون وطن، تسكله ماسا لون وطن نفقا لعودة.
Good morning, everyone. And welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and continued in his memory by a group of his colleagues.
So our next speaker, Dr. Rada Karmi, is a Palestinian-British physician and academic. She was born in Jerusalem and left when she was just a young child in 1948. She has written several books, including her memoir, In Search of Fatima, and Married to Another Man. And we are very lucky to have her here today. So could you please welcome Dr. Rada Karmi.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you very much for being here. And I must say, it is so appropriate that we are meeting at this time. First of all, because it's the anniversary of the 1948 Nakba, which went last Thursday, May the 15th. But second, because this meeting is happening in Switzerland. And I know it's not happening in Basel. I asked people last night, why not? Because it would be really, it's really very uplifting to think that 66 years ago, Palestine was split apart, and 66 years later, we are meeting to try to put it together again. Now, I know that people in this hall are agreed on the aim, the idea of the one democratic state. So we don't need to talk about that very much, because we are agreed. That is the premise of this meeting. Now, the question which bothers many people about this, and which I'm going to try to tackle, if not to be able to solve for you, much as Ilan gave a forward advertisement for what I might do. But of course, the issue is, how do you get there? And one of the real weaknesses, I think, of the one state movement, the one democratic state movement, has been its inability to put forward a blueprint, a strategy for actually getting there. So there are really very important questions here. If we were to have a one democratic state, what actually would it be like? What would it be like? What are its institutions? What is its form of government? What is its constitution? What's about the educational system? What about language? What about the repatriation of the expelled Palestinians? How do you do that? Do you allow them to come back to an approximate place from where they came from? And if so, what about the people who are living there now? What do you do with them? What about land ownership? How is that going to be sorted out? You know, many, many questions which need to be thought through and resolved in some shape or form. Now, I don't have the blueprint for this. I really don't. I wish I could offer you the finished product and tell you this is what the democratic state would look like. I can't do that. But what I think we need to do, and especially here that we are meeting together, is to look at what are the issues that are relevant to the questions I have posed. First, how do we get there? And second, when we get there, what sort of a state is it? Now, let me spend a few moments talking about the obstacles to this solution. I think it's very important to refresh our memories about the considerable obstacles there are to realizing this, this aim, apart from how do you get there, just as an aim, what are the obstacles? And what we mustn't do, and I know has happened to me for many years in my activist life, is to get so excited and carried away with an aim, an idea, to be fired up, and to, in a sense, ignore what are the problems that will prevent that from happening. So, let's look at these obstacles. First of all, there is the problem of what I can only call current thinking about this conflict. Now, you heard already from the previous speaker about the approach to the whole issue anyway, the wrong approach, the way that there is a general misunderstanding of the nature of the Zionist project. But I'm thinking much more now of the fact that there is an Israel and there is invested in the idea of Israel a tremendous amount of energy and devotion and support which cannot be ignored, the idea of the Jewish state. First of all, don't forget that Zionism was very careful in harnessing for its success lobbies in the power centers of this world to maintain the project going. We know this, we know it as second nature. Anybody who lives in Europe or in the United States is well aware of the power of the pro-Israel lobbies. So there are all these people fighting to keep Israel going. But there is also the question of Jewish identity. Now, right or wrong, a very large number of Jewish people have invested their sense of their identity, of who they are, in the idea of the Jewish state. And this is not to be forgotten. It's very powerful. I know I was brought up in Europe, as you know, or as you heard, and I was brought up in England, but anybody in Europe would recognize the way the Jews feel emotionally supported and involved in the idea of a Jewish state, which makes them feel that they have a sense of identity and so on. Obviously, we can't go on to it. It fascinates me. This issue really fascinates me because it's a big obstacle. There will be people fighting you, not on the basis of, what you're putting forward. Is it sensible? Is it not sensible? They're fighting as if they're fighting for their very psychological survival. And it's very powerful. Cannot be ignored. Now, if you also add to that, that many people in Europe, not Jews, but Europeans, many people also share this feeling about the Jewish state for various reasons, also share this emotional investment in the continuation of a Jewish state. And there you have a problem. Now, let's look at the Palestinian side of this. Now, because of the two-state paradigm, because after the 1967 war and long before, there had been these ideas floating about of partition, of having a Jewish state, of having an Arab state, etc. Because of the two-state idea, the Palestinians themselves became invested in the idea of a sovereign Palestinian state. And this cannot be ignored either. Many Palestinians would like to be living in their own space, even if it was a small space, which they could call theirs, where they rule themselves, and where there are no Israelis. And this is very, very important. Now, so here you have the issue of Palestinian sovereignty. Many Palestinians fear to be second-class citizens in a so-called one state. They say this to my face if I talk about this. I do. They say, what you want for us is to become second-class citizens in this one state. And I can understand why they feel that. There is an advanced Israeli-Jewish society, and many Palestinians are not so advanced. We have to face that. So the fear is that because of that imbalance, you know, what you get is a kind of South Africa. So we have this next problem. Now, add to that the role of the Palestinian Authority. Now, I really, really want to stress this, because what worries me about a lot of activists who are very keen on the one democratic state, there is almost a tendency to sideline, forget, ignore the Palestinian Authority as people who have not done their job, they're failures, they've failed, we don't want to have anything to do with them. But that won't do. It won't do. Because the reality is that there is a Palestinian leadership. Irrespective of how representative it is, how legitimate it is, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that it exists and is propped up and supported by Israel, the European Union, the United States, because that suits the Israeli interests. The problem is, because you've got this Palestinian leadership, in inverted commas, it will be functioning and working along a certain line, which is not the line of the one democratic state project that we are engaged in. And you know that there is a considerable danger of this leadership signing up to agreements. It's unlikely, I know, it looks unlikely, the John Kerry initiative has failed, but it's still there. This leadership is still there. And it's still a threat to, with its pen, which it might well sign onto something which would stand in the way of the kind of thing that we want to see. We cannot ignore that, nor can we ignore the vested interests. That is, not only the interests of the Palestinian leadership in maintaining itself in a position of power, but the vested interest in the business agreements between Palestinians and Israelis, and there are many of these, which are very much based on the idea of a subordinate Palestinian entity and the Israeli business brains that are doing this. There's a lot of that. And of course, there is, we must not forget, what I and many other people have called the peace industry. That the thousands of people all over the world who are getting salaries and getting a way of life as well by doing things on the peace process, on the two-state solution, on helping the Palestinians, on setting up NGOs, on going out to the occupied territories and being extremely busy. And that includes charities, it includes UN bodies, it includes all kinds of organizations which are helping the Palestinians towards realizing their aim of statehood. Can't be ignored, huge peace industry, which will fight this. Remember that the One State Movement does not have any institutional support or any government support anywhere. So it's actually a movement coming from activists, idealists, political thinkers, and so on. There is no institutional base for this at all. And the most serious thing of all is that there is no Palestinian unity on this aim. Now, it's wonderful to see you here, all of you, but we cannot pretend that the Palestinians themselves are unified and agreed that that is the best way forward for them. And I've already alluded to the desire on the part of many to be in their own state. So we have no Palestinian unity on this. And needless to say, we do not therefore have a leadership. We do not have a leadership for this movement. And that is very, very serious. And our final obstacle, if those are not enough, the ones I've mentioned, is that we don't have time. We don't have time. And I'll tell you what I mean. The ethnic cleansing project that Ilan talked about so vividly and so well is alive and kicking and ongoing. The Israelis see very clearly that things may no longer remain as favorable for their project as in the past, and they are in a hurry. And anybody who looks at the growth of settlements, the right-wing nature of the Israeli government, which is promoting settlement and colonization, must not be in any doubt that they're in a race against time before any of this changes against them. So what are we going to do? Well, my suggestion is, first, we remain aware of the problems and the obstacles I have outlined. We must not behave as if things are, we've got a clean field, an even playing field, and all we have to do is run off into the race. It is not like that. So I want to really, the rest of this talk, put before you thoughts about strategies that we might employ, bearing in mind this situation. Now, the first question, therefore, is what are we going to do about the fact that there is a Palestinian leadership, whether we like it or not, which is working in another direction, in an opposite direction? And not only that, but there is a United Nations recognition of something called Palestinian statehood on the 1967 territories. What do we do with that? Do we throw it aside or what? Well, these are things that we could do, given the situation. We could work on and develop, as seems to be the case of our meeting here, develop a global campaign for the One Democratic State, which, irrespective of the situation which we're seeing, irrespective of the layers of political realities which are fighting against our idea, but we say, well, we can't do anything about that. What we have to do is to carry on with our own work. And the hope of that would be that the growth of a grassroots movement, which becomes global, then exerts its own pressure. So in other words, it comes up from the ground and goes up. So it's a ground, it's a down-up approach. And if we want to do that, then we have to be prepared. This has to be a big campaign. If it's going to work, It will not work unless it's a really big campaign. By that I mean one needs to have, first of all, be prepared to have education. You need a whole program of education to explain to people what the hell this is. In my own limited experience, I'm only one person, I know that when I've spoken to audiences who have started off very skeptical, with you know, yes, but, you know, the sort of audience, and I have tried to explain the idea, by the end, most of them are totally in agreement. Now, this isn't because of the magic of my presentation, but because they really understand the logic. They can see it. It's just nobody talks about it. So you need, I think, a very big, studied educational campaign and promotion at the same time, promoting it and educating people about it. You need to create groups. Every country, every society should have a one-state group. You need to have for a movement like this, I need hardly tell you, must have a central secretariat. We're not going to talk about, chairmen and presidents and so on. We're talking about a secretariat, a body which oversees this kind of campaign. That is crucial. And you need to consider bridge building. That is talking to the idea that the Palestinian Arabs are the ones who have the most to gain by this solution. They have the most to gain, and therefore they must be at the forefront of the campaign to educate and draw into it Israeli Jews. It is something which I consider to be a Palestinian responsibility, to create bridges, to explain these ideas, to draw the Israeli Jewish community into an understanding of what the options are and what their future is. So what are the advantages of this approach? Of course, it's a huge thing, but it does give you a bottom-up movement which in itself may become powerful enough, strong enough, to create a new political reality. Our parallel, of course, is South Africa. That is the BDS movement which went worldwide and eventually created tremendous pressure from civil society, from ordinary people, and influenced the political process. But of course, there are very, very important differences. The South African parallel had a clear leadership in the ANC, which was a predominantly black South African leadership, which guided and was the reference point. We don't have that. So this is a big problem. What's the disadvantage of this approach? Well, it seems to me to be obvious to all of you, as it is to me. Time. It takes time to build these kinds of movements. We mustn't fool ourselves. It takes time. And though I am encouraged, and I think all of us are encouraged, by the growth of support for the one-state movement, it has to be much faster than this. You know, I tell you, 10 years ago, or maybe just a bit over 10 years ago, maybe I'm sure Ilan and other people remember, there wasn't the kind of support for the one-state idea as we see now. It's quite extraordinary. It's extremely encouraging. But we are talking in terms of a lot more. We have a lot further to go, and that will take time. Now, so that is one strategy. And we indeed, the group of us in Britain, got down together and drew a sort of a strategy, in fact a detailed strategy, on if we go down this route, which will be discussed later today. So that is the one way that we could do it. Now, I want to put to you another way. Now, this other way is, I'm not putting this forward as being ideal or as being something that people really very much want, but the reason I think that I have to put it forward and people must discuss it quite seriously is that it might be the best way, and I don't mean by best the most delightful, the most pleasing, but the most effective way of getting at what we want. Remember that in the end, what we're after is a state which deals equally with its citizens. Yeah? Now, today, what we have is one state. We do. Israel is one state. It rules the whole of historic Palestine, but it does so unequally. Jewish citizens of this state have privileges which are not offered to non-Jewish citizens of this state. You would call it an apartheid state, you would call it a discriminatory state, racist, whatever term it is appropriate. But that is the reality. Now, if I were to say that we could transform this currently apartheid one state into a non-apartheid one state, then I think everybody in this hall would agree that that was a good idea. So this is what I wanted to put to you. You see, the Palestinians under occupation could take the following route, which I'm about to outline. First, they become agreed and aware that the leadership that they have, that the Palestinian Authority, is not not only not going to give them, lead them to what they want. In other words, if they want a state, that's not going to happen. But much worse than that, that leadership is acting as a buffer between Israel, Israeli rule, and the Palestinian people. It is, in fact, protecting and insulating Israel from its responsibilities towards the occupied people. If that authority, that Palestinian government, were to go, what would happen? Well, what would happen is that Israel immediately becomes responsible directly for the people that it is now ruling through the Palestinian Authority. Israel will be involved in a lot of extra expenditure in putting its army units throughout the occupied territories, because there will be no security cooperation with the Palestinian Authority. It will cease. So the Israeli army will become directly responsible for security, which is very difficult, which is very expensive, etc. And there will be a Palestinian population which requires humanitarian aid, humanitarian services, currently being supplied by the European Union and the United States and international charities. That will cease, and Israel will be directly responsible. Now, so if the Palestinian Authority were no longer there and was not running off to the United Nations and wanting more recognition and becoming registered with a number of organizations and going on about the two-state solution, the people under occupation, having then become directly in touch with their occupier, then demand equal rights. They demand equal rights. They say, you are ruling us, but you are ruling us unequally. We have no rights. Your Jewish citizens have rights, we have none. So we demand equal rights with your citizens. Now, you have to actually ask yourselves, what would happen if that were to take place? How would that be? How would that be? Now, I want to put, therefore, the case for this scenario, and then I'll talk, obviously, about the things that are against it. Okay, well, what's for this scenario is that, number one, it's honest. Instead of this game, which the Palestinians are now engaged in, pretending to have their own government, their own this, their own that, and that they're going to have a state, they stop pretending, and they face facts. which is they're not going to get their state, and their government is acting as a buffer and a protector for their occupier. So, first of all, it's an honest statement of the position. Second, it starts an idea, a campaign for a human right, a fundamental right, which is equal rights, which will have resonance everywhere. I'd like to see the society or the politician who can stand there and tell you, I'm against equal rights. There is no such thing. So this will carry a lot of sympathy in world opinion and will carry a lot of support. Third, if this were to happen, and the currently Palestinian occupied people become equal citizens with Jews in Israel, then of course they become the vanguard of the one state, don't they? Because if they are demanding equal rights for themselves along with everybody else, you've got equal rights. When you have equal rights, you have representation. When you have representation in the government, you then start to bring in laws. And in case anybody here in this hall thinks for a moment that I've forgotten about the right of return, let me tell you, I most certainly cannot forget, nor can any Palestinian living forget about the right of return. But how's it going to happen? Now, I am putting forward two strategies. I talked to you about the global movement to create a one state, one democratic state, which will, of course, ensure the right of return. And I'm putting to you a second strategy in which the indigenous population currently under Israeli occupation becomes citizens of the enlarged Israeli state and then starts to legislate, make laws which enable the return of the Palestinian refugees. Now, I'm perfectly well aware that this is a very difficult thing that I'm proposing. It's very difficult for most Palestinians. Palestinians I've talked to about this idea, the equal rights idea, reject it immediately. They have said to me, you're asking us to become really second-class citizens under Israeli rule. You're asking us to forget about who we are and to become subsumed in this Zionist state. You're asking us to give up all hopes and dreams of having an independent sovereign state of our own and to reverse the clock to take back all the stuff we become used to, the flag, the ideas about who we are, our place in the world, etc., etc. You're asking us to get rid of all of that in return for becoming second-class servants in the Israeli state. So it's not something which one would advocate lightly, and I do it really only because it strikes me as a very intelligent thing that the Palestinians could do to explode the myth around Israel and its real occupation, to get rid of the idea that you have two parties here, equal parties, that you've got the Israelis with their government and you've got the Palestinians with their Palestinian Authority, and the two must get together and must talk. You know very well that that's not the situation. It's not the situation. You've got a settler colonialist talking to its colonized people. That's the reality. If you continue with the charade of a Palestinian government, etc., etc., you maintain that illusion. And that is very wrong. If you bust it by saying, look, come on, the game is over. We know we're occupied. All we're saying to you, Israel, is you want to occupy us, then you give us equal rights. You don't want to occupy us, get out of our land. It seems to me a very sensible step forward. Anyway, I want to end finally with this. Whatever we decide, and I sincerely hope we discuss these strategies sensibly and in a spirit of constructively, I do urge you, and I do recommend, that we must have a party, a political party, for the one democratic state. I know that it is currently a movement, but we need to work towards creating an actual political party, and that political party would then draw up a membership composed of the parties most involved in this, directly involved, the Palestinians and the Israeli Jews. And as part of that, we should really have many things will come from that, but one of them, which I very much want to recommend to you, is a citizens registry. That is, before we leave here tomorrow, those who are of the two groups that I talked about should be prepared to sign themselves up as citizens of the one democratic state. And once we have a proper political party that then puts itself properly on the world stage, I think we will have taken a great step forward. So whatever we decide, please bear in mind that we have to be aware of the obstacles, we have to be creative in the way we do this, and we have to be brave in the face of enormous hostility and anger from all the people who've invested so much in the idea of the Jewish state, and will then have to give up their illusions and understand the party is over.
Thank you very much, Rada.